The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
So here we are still, Comic-Con International. We're on the floor with Steven from Prop Store. This is an amazing display.
Thank you, man.
From what I understand, it's all movie-used props, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we have here is a preview. It's sort of like the teaser, the first reveal for Prop Store's Entertainment Memorabilia Live Auction, which takes place in September in London. It's physically takes place in London, but of course it's online as well. We stream it throughout the whole day. You can bid from anywhere in the world.
So you have an assortment of pop culture, like iconography. Like, this is effectively like the pop culture religious display. Like, it's a church. You know, you have the T-800. You have, you know, a cap shield. You have Han Solo's jacket.
Like, yes. Yes.
Where do these come from? This is amazing.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a question that I get asked a lot. And this is an auction that we put together every year. Every year, September in London. And it takes me a whole year and then some to put together the next auction every time. You know, it's as soon as we get to this sort of point, as I said, it's the first reveal. The catalogue is literally going to press today. So it's going to print. So we're locked on the content. And my head is already spinning about how the heck do I try and emulate this for next year? Because people come on and we've been doing Comic-Con now for 11 years. This is our 12th show. And everybody goes, it's the best yet. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. And then I'm like, oh, how am I going to do it again next year?
No pressure, man. Yeah.
So it's a mix of sources and resources. We work directly with the film studios and production companies. We work hand in hand with collectors who have acquired the material over a number of years. We work with companies that are involved within the film industry, so rental houses and service industries, so, you know, the prop companies, the costume companies. And it really is just a mix of 25 years, or I've been in the hobby now for nearly 30 years. It's just a mix of all of those sort of sources and resources and contacts and connections that I've made over that period of time. There is no simple formula to it. I can assure you of that.
So, I mean, like I said, we're surrounded by like just iconic pieces of movie memorabilia. There has to be something, maybe not necessarily in this auction, maybe in a previous one, but there has to be something that you were truly blown away by. Is there like that one item that you're like, maybe I just keep this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a tough one. Legally, I can't even bid in my own auction.
Right.
So it's, I think a couple of years ago, we had the Batpod motorbike from Chris Nolan's Dark Knight Rises. And, you know, that thing was just nuts. I mean, it was an incredible thing. I had a lot of fun getting my photo taken on that, sitting on it and stuff. And, you know, that was definitely a moment where I was like, ooh, what I could have done with this. It sold for over $250,000 ultimately and ended up actually in the US. But I think every auction there's going to be something or a few things that I'm looking at going. And I think actually this time, you know, we sit here and we chat with a lot of collectors. That's what we're here to do. And probably one of the pieces in this year's auction is the Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford signature fedora hat.
Yeah.
Screen matched to a number of scenes in the film. You know, it's just like Star Wars is probably more my thing than Indiana Jones. But just, I mean, that's just one of those sort of, it's like a pair of ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz. The fedora from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Who wouldn't want that in their collection?
I distinctly remember as a child trying to make a hat like out of like a baseball cap and paper that looked like the fedora. Like every little kid has wanted to like put that hat on and then whip the whip, which when I tried to whip the whip, I snapped my lip really hard.
Those things are dangerous,
yeah,
man.
They're super dangerous.
Yeah, we got a Temple of Doom whip here. Don't try it here.
Why in the world my parents let me have a whip when I was like 9 is still past me. But so when you're putting together, you're assembling this collection, like, kind of how do you, you know, market it? Like, who are you getting the word out to? I mean, just besides the website, are there like specific, I mean, I'm not asking you to name drop, but do you have like specific clientele that you know, I know this guy is going to like this, or I know this family is looking for these.
Sure. I mean, there's no doubt there's a degree of that. Prop Store has been trading. This is our 20th anniversary this year. It's our birthday year. And so we have a huge number of people on our database, and we know what a lot of collectors' passions are for and what they're looking for. But it's very, very tough really to predict, even when we know collectors well, what it is they might engage with on auction day. And so the key for us, you know, what's really critical is spreading the message far and wide. And this is really where the campaign starts. So the auction takes place at the end of September. Here we are in July, teasing the material out. You know, a lot of the content that you see here is being constantly photographed by people and being tagged, and it's going viral. And that's the sort of the genesis, if you like, for the campaign. When I get back to the UK in a week or two's time, August the 1st is when we actually drop the first press release. The official press release goes out. And again, we're partnered with a lot of agencies. We have our own PR company who works with us and an in-house team as well. And that's sort of delivering the message out through the press agencies and the outlets that we worked with before, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, Empire Magazine, Total Film, some of the TV shows, Good Morning Britain. And it's just really about getting out there and pounding the pavement and then building the campaign through our own internal resources by engaging with the fandom as well. So we're out on, you know, if we've got James Bond props, then we want to be engaging with the James Bond collectors as much as we want to be engaging with the Star Wars prop collectors. They're going to be working and reading and engaging in very different communities, and we have to make sure that we reach them. So we have a full-on outreach program as well that is very, very target-specific based upon the content we're bringing to market.
So I've always kind of wondered, like, you know, you come into these movie props and you say that some of them come from the studios, but some of them are coming from, you know, private collections and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
How do movie studios decide what to do with the props when they're finished with the movies?
Again, there's no short answer to that, to be honest with you. It's almost different for every production, every film that's produced. In so many instances, films will... I think the Power Rangers guy's going nuts over there.
Very excited, yeah.
She loves Power Rangers.
It's her job.
I think that, you know, there's, again, just a different formula. A lot of these productions will have different partners, and those partners, you know, the production company versus the distributor. So, you know, somebody who makes a film and then distributes to Universal Studios, so the production company want to keep some stuff. Universal want to keep some stuff. The archive will want to have some stuff. They want to use some material for marketing. Some of it will be rental. We'll go back to the rental houses. So it's very much on a case-by-case basis, and it's a lot of it's driven out through our long-term relationships with a lot of these studios and production companies that we've been working with. So, you know, again, it's not like, oh, okay, we have a relationship with this distributor. We know that we're going to get this film, that film, that film, because it's on their slate. There may be other interested parties there that will influence that decision, and we have no bearing on that at all.
How many items are going to be in this latest auction, and what's, you know, kind of... Well, I guess you've already said your favorite so far is the Indiana Jones hat.
I would say it's the Indy hat, you know. There's going to be 600 lots in the sale. I think in total that's from 270 different film titles and TV shows. So there's a huge mix and variety of content. Obviously, what we're looking at and what you've seen here today are some of the highlights, the transportable highlights, I should say, because some of the stuff that we've got is a little bit too big or fragile to bring here, because we ship a lot over from the UK specifically for this, and some of it comes in from LA. And the prices vary dramatically as well, anything from sort of $40, $60 right up to the six figures.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it's, as I said earlier, I'm a Star Wars nut. You know, I love some of the Star Wars content. We've got Anakin Skywalker's Hero Lightsaber from Revenge of the Sith. We've got Palpatine's Hero Lightsaber from Revenge of the Sith. We've never seen Hero Lightsabers from those films come to market before. They're super exciting to see. We have donated, actually... by Lucasfilm, through the costume designer Michael Kaplan, a First Order trooper helmet from The Last Jedi. Love the design of that. I mean, it's a phenomenal piece of design. Sitting next to that in the display cabinet we have here, a New Hope trooper helmet. You know, and just to see them side by side, you know, it gets goosebumps. It's just like his films, you know, 40 years apart, and the different styles of design and construction and fabrication. It's just great to see in the printed catalogue and online. So, yes, it's all exciting stuff.
Have you ever had like a actor that was in a movie say, "Oh my gosh, I need that because it was mine in the movie"?
Absolutely. Yeah, because so few of them, you know, there's this sort of popular misconception that all actors have the ability to take home whatever it is that they want from the films they're working on. You know, wrong. It's actually really, really tough to negotiate that sort of opportunity for any of these guys. You know, they're paid to do a job, come and work in the film, they get their pay for that,
then they go home.
Extra freebies on top of that. Now, we all know that over the years, a lot of these guys have been gifted things or, you know, they've managed to acquire things that they've used, but a lot of them get nothing. And so we've definitely had directors, actors, producers come to us through directly or through their assistants and say, we got to try and acquire that. You know, I want that for my collection because that's something I was heavily involved with.
I've seen that you do vehicles. You talk about the Batpod. Like, you know, what's the logistics? Like, do a lot of those vehicles work or are most of them just like kind of prop vehicles?
Well, again, that's a mix. Most of them actually are functional for the production. In this year's auction, we've got in September one of the Formula One cars from the Ron Howard film Rush. I don't know whether that's a movie that you saw, starring Chris Hemsworth. And we actually have what's called the Hesketh car, which is the first car that we see him driving as he's sort of coming up through the ranks. And that is a car that was built for practical purposes. So it has a sort of small engine in there so that it could drive around the circuit and they can make it look like it's going at high speed. The Batpod was a fully functional motorbike when it was used for filming. But just really down to sort of liability issues and insurance issues, we have to drain those. And also for when they're on display as well, we have to drain them of all fluids. We're going to be removing the batteries. We're going to have a disclaimer that goes with each vehicle stating that it's sold as an asset that was used in the film as a static prop. You know, that's how it's been passed on. What somebody decides to do after that point, you know, whether they want to get it working again, get it running again, that's totally down to them. But our recommendation is always, because these things have been made for film use, the guys who drive these things have been trained for months to do it. They're not like normal cars. They're not like normal motorbikes. Our recommendation is sit there, let it sit, enjoy it for what it is, the aesthetics, but just don't try and ride it, you know?
I would definitely drive the Batpod. I'm not going to lie. I'd be like, yeah, cool story, bro. I got to call my mechanic cousin.
Once you sat on that thing and realized just how tough that might be to do, you might change your mind, man.
It looks ridiculous.
It's like the Lawmaster motorbikes from the Stallone Dread film. Do you remember that film?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So they really wanted to emulate the design that you see in the original comic books where they have these super fat tires,
right?
Very square edge, super fat tires. And of course, the problem they had with that was you can't turn a corner. So whenever you see those films those bikes in the film, they're driving in a straight line and they pull up. If you try and drive that thing around a corner, it falls over. And so you literally couldn't drive around a corner, you know, so you do have to be very, very careful.
So how can people find Prop Store and, like, get registered to, like, bid online and just go through the catalog of the upcoming auction?
Okay, well, that's nice and simple. You just go to propstore.com/live auction. So the registration is actually open now. We open up specifically for the Comic-Con weekend. It's a sort of early registration. The catalog itself goes live on August the 31st. So that's when you'll be able to browse all the content. But we're teasing material really between now and then and right through to auction day through our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So you'll be able to get some sneak peeks of content there as well. And then once it goes live on August the 31st, you can actually start bidding. So from that point forward until the end of September, or just before the end of September when we actually hold the live auction, the bidding action starts. And so we'll sort of start to get an indication at that time what people are interested in and what they're looking out for. If you just go to propstore.com anytime, we've got over 7,500 buy it now items sitting there ready. So if you're interested in buying something without the pressure of the auction environment, or if you just want to get a feel for what else is in the market, there's a lot of content there to browse through. And we have a lot of articles and blogs on our website as well, which sort of educate a lot of people. And they're very informative about collecting and what's come previously and the sort of things that we've sold in the past.
It's interesting because, like, it's not just the auction side of it. You're like very intent on informing people and letting people know this is what you're getting, this is what you're paying for. That's really cool that you have that education element to the website too.
I think it's critically important. Yeah, for Comic-Con, we've been doing, as I said, for this our 12th time here. But prior to that, I spent, you know, I've been doing shows for nearly 20 years. And when I first started doing them, over 20 years, in fact, when I first started doing them in the UK, it was all about educating people. Yes, you really can own an asset, an artifact that was used in a film that you love. And, you know, for many, many years, I was way ahead of the curve. Nobody else was doing anything like this, certainly in the UK. And all I would get is people coming up to me going, so that's a replica what? Or, you know, that's a cast of the other? And just like, no, man, you can actually own this thing. This was used in the movie. So, yeah, it's been a long journey of education. Maybe here, in fact, we had exactly the same thing when we first started at Comic-Con as well. Because they're so used to seeing the Anubis helmets, which are awesome,
right?
You know, and this is just another replica, isn't it? Or the sideshow piece. And it's just like, no, this is the real thing. Less of those questions today.
It's really cool. Like, it's really cool just how it's an all-encompassing, like, way of looking into collecting. Like, I heard you mention that this is your job, but you still think of it as a hobby.
No, I love it. I mean, I'm still a collector. I have a house full of this stuff, as well as my office. So, obviously, at work is full of the stuff. And I've got, you know, 20,000 square foot warehouse in Valencia with our LA team, 10,000 square foot full of stuff in London. But I still, you know, I absolutely love it with a passion.
Oh, my wife would hate if this was my job because our house would just be full of shit.
Rare collectibles, not shit, man. Rare collectibles.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I like weird stuff. So,
okay, we can talk about that another time.
Well, thank you. Oh, well played, sir. Well played. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And
That's
I mean,
pleasure.
We'd love to see some of these a little closer up.
Yeah, sure.
Really cool.
We'll open up some of the cabinets for you. You can take some photos and share them with your fans.
It'd be great. Thank you so much.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast, Baron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Baron Space production.